First of all, how's Dubai? I know you just recently moved in.
I've learned a lot about the real estate market. I have lapped it up, brother.
How did that stage of playing international impacted your life?
I played for India at a time when it was kind of impossible to play for India, especially white ball cricket.
I know cricket involves a lot of mental health. How did you overcome that?
I find myself in this South African hotel. My room's in the 21st or 22nd floor. I open the window and I'm sitting with my legs out.
On the window?
I think we live in a world where we like to take people down. Just agree to disagree with each other.
And we've also heard something that you've made buying meat. I want you to say that name, but who you made buying meat?
The world wasn't supposed to know, but didn't put up on social media that Mahi and me met because of.
Welcome to Spill the Tea with Kalfpas. Today, we have the honor of hosting a true cricket maestro, someone who has left an inedible mark on Indian cricket with his remarkable skills. Join us in giving a warm welcome to the dynamic Indian cricketer, Robin Uthappa. Hi, Robin. How are you?
Very good, Dhruv. How are you?
Good. First of all, thank you for coming on the show. Welcome to Spill the Tea on Gulf Buzz.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's my absolute pleasure to be on the show.
We love you. First of all, how's Dubai? I know you just recently moved in a couple of months ago. So how is that going?
It's been phenomenal, to be honest. Yeah. You know, we love Dubai. It's been a great change for us as a family. One of the main purposes of moving to Dubai was for a better quality of life for the kids, especially education. And today, you know, my son goes to one of the best schools in the world. And I couldn't ask for more as far as primary education is concerned. Because I think that that base education, that foundational education is really important for kids. And for me, I think as a father, I want to give him, and you can't guarantee success in life, but you can give them the best chance to be successful. And I thought solid primary education is important. So he's gotten it here now.
So the last time I saw you was, I think, five months ago.
Yeah.
And to now, that is the time actually you're just moved in like a couple of months. And now I think you're almost a year
in. Almost a year in, yeah.
So how has that transition been for you?
Well, it's been great. It's been like a huge educational kind of year for me. I've learned a lot. I've actually made some incredible friends. I used to be religious, but I'm quite a spiritual person. And the kind of people that have come into my life has been something that I'm truly very grateful for. I've met some really, really nice people along the way in this last year. I've learned a lot of things. I know quite a lot about the Dubai market right now. It can be, you know, it could be moving, it could be homes, it could be schools, education, it could be visas. One of my friends said, you know what, you know so much about this market right now. Maybe you should start one end-to-end services for, you know, anyone like you.
You should probably, at least on social media. I've seen a lot of people who move and then they start doing it and then they've gone viral or something because of that. Because there are a lot of hidden things that people don't know about.
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah.
What was one of that you faced that you thought, shit, I should have known this earlier, like, you know, like would have made your transition more smoother?
Well, to be honest, there were quite a few things, honestly. When you're in India, you live with a certain mindset. I'm from Bangalore. So, you know, the traffic in Bangalore is getting very tenacious. And over the last 5-6 years,
true,
it got really, really, really bad. And unfortunately, one of the things that we had an issue with is that our kids weren't able to do more than one thing in a day. And at an age where they should be learning life skills and learning things that will hold them good for their whole life, my son wasn't able to do that. And that's one of the primary reasons. We're like, okay, you know what? We as parents, we need to fulfill our roles and our duties to our kids. And I think one of those main things is to be able to provide solid education, teaching them of 3 or 4 life skills that will hold them good for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
So gymnastics is one of those things that we were teaching our son, Nolan. He started at the age of like 3 months.
Oh, wow.
And then swimming was another thing. And unfortunately, even though school is 5 minutes away, we still couldn't get him to school, finish school, and then go back and do another life skill. Let alone playing a sport for that matter, right? He couldn't, like, he tried cricket, but again, he's too young. I didn't want to play cricket at a really, really young age. But anything else, like say tennis or swimming or life skill. Swimming, you need to know how to swim. For me, gymnastics, you learn how to fall and kind of recover from the fall. Even in life, you fall a lot of times, right?
True. 100%.
Physically and metaphorically.
Yeah.
So for me, I think gymnastics kind of teaches you that. And sport in general teaches you that. How to come back, how to bounce back. You can tomorrow be on the road and someone can knock you over when you're walking down the street on a footpath. But if you know how to fall, then you'll know, you'll make sure your head doesn't hit the ground. You'll roll on your shoulders. Just those life skills. Yeah. So that's why, that was the purpose of that. And when he came here, you know, he started doing, he he actually started with gymnastics and then kind of evolved to parkour. And okay. now he's doing parkour classes here, which I think wow. is phenomenal. There's stuff like that that kind of just blew my mind away, you know. My mind was very closed about, you know, as a father, as a provider, as a husband, you're thinking about, okay, how do you secure your family? How do you look at investments? And there are limited options in India. But when you come here, the options kind of open up to you. Dubai can be very transactional. I've learned that. And I've actually learned that the hard way. I think as long as you know that you will meet the right people along the way, you'll have to kind of filter through the ones who are transactional and, you know, who are more long-term.
Yeah.
And then kind of be aware of that. And I learned that, I think, in this last year, in my experiences, in my interactions with people. I've learned a lot about the real estate market.
I think that's the first step.
I have lapped it up, brother.
How many houses have you seen before you moved?
I have seen, my wife and I have seen close to 120 to 130 houses.
Is that a Dubai thing, I think, probably to see a lot of houses?
It probably is, because right now, I think I would have to categorize it in two different halves.
Okay.
There's Dubai, say, pre-2010
yeah.
or 2015, and Dubai post-2015.
Totally.
They're very, very different houses yes. and eras, right?
Yes.
I think anything pre-2015 are incredibly lovely houses.
Huge houses.
Huge, man. Huge. But anything post-2015, they've gotten smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. Yeah. And it's weird.
So Robin, we all know you're a successful cricketer. We've all seen you playing. So before we dig into that, I wanted to know how you started your journey as a cricketer. Like, what influenced you and how you started playing domestically first and then internationally?
Oh, man. It's how much time do you have?
I have a lot of time.
So basically, I think cricket was obviously a gift from God that I kind of recognized very early in my life. In fact, through my first conscious memory of myself as a human being is of me playing cricket. My mom throwing the ball to me and me playing it with a broken plastic bat.
Wow.
Incidentally, my mom actually has a picture of that day.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird how she has that. And so I knew that cricket is something that I'll always do. My parents actually made me play tennis first as a sport.
Oh.
Because my dad, actually a former international hockey referee, he played hockey as a sport as well. And within the sport of, I think, team sport and within, you know, sport in India in general, there are different dynamics at work. So he felt that playing an individual sport is better than playing a team sport because everything is in your hands. So he wanted me to play an individual sport. So he made me play tennis. But a year into playing tennis, I was 6 years old and they made me start. But a year into playing tennis, I went to my mom, opened up a newspaper. It's called the Indian Express.
Oh, okay.
I went to the city sports section. I told her, I want to go to that academy. And my mom was like, what is wrong with this kid? 7-year-old, he's not going out to play with his friends. He's come out here with a newspaper and telling me he wants to go to that academy. So a day later, I saw the first pair of gloves in my life. My dad brought home a yellow color pair of yellow.
all yellow. Not even white, yellow.
Yellow color pair of cotton gloves. And I was so excited. And I think 2 days later, we went and picked up some equipment for me. And then I joined the camp. I was 7 years old. And the game came very naturally to me. I think I'm a little bit of a natural athlete because I think it comes yeah. from my dad's side. At the age of 9, I played for the under 13 state side.
Yeah.
So growing up, I was a little bit of a prodigy. So much so that, you know, a lot of parents whose kids I played cricket with and who are my age would often complain that I'm overage because I was, I don't know, big boned as a kid. After a certain age, between the ages of 10 and 13, I went through epilepsy. Was on steroids for 3 years. And in doing so, I ended up putting on a lot of weight. And that's where it kind of stunted my growth, so to speak.
Yeah.
So that had an impact. But every year I kind of played for state. So from the age of 9 till I played first class cricket, that was at the age of 16, I played for state. And then, yeah. So I started really young. So at 16, I played for Karnataka at the first class level, Ranji Trophy okay. level. And then by 16, I played under 17 India. 16, I played under 19 India. And then by 19 India A, 18 India A. And then by 20, I played for India.
Wow. So there were a lot of levels India.
Yeah.
So what were the key milestones in your domestic level before you went international that you clearly remember?
So back then, the competition wasn't as big as the competition is now. After the IPL came around and after the onset of T20 cricket, The competition has, I don't know, no, quadrupled would be too small a term. I think it's just 100x.
Yeah.
Let's speak in crypto language. You know, Dubai, Dubai jargon. So I think it's kind of 100x in that sense, where the competition's really gone up. So back then, if you were a little bit, if you were special in some small way, you'd be noticed.
Okay.
So growing up, if you played for under 19 India, then you were pegged as one of the guys who could play for India. So I got a quick look into my first class side. I had a good initial first 2 years. And then they made me play the Challenger Trophy when I was 18. And the Challenger Trophy is a tournament where you play India A, the India seniors team, and then there's India A and there's India B.
Okay.
So then you're the main Indian team, and then these two other teams that play a tournament between themselves. And then out of that, you pick up, you know, the next guys in line or the guys who'd be the standbys of the Indian team. So in that tournament, a lot of us from our under-19 India A group, that was Ambati Raidu, Suresh Raina, me, R.P. Singh, Piyush Chawla, Shikhar Dhawan, all of us played under-19 together.
Together in
the same? All of us. So okay. We were that batch that, like, I think out of 15 of us, I think 13 of us played for India.
Wow.
And successfully.
Yeah.
That batch kind of came through. One by one, we started kind of dripping into the Indian team. Yeah. And Irfan Pathan, how can I forget Irfan? Irfan as well. So a lot of these guys are dripping through. And I think that was a pivotal tournament for me where I scored 100 against India A. And that kind of put me up in the limelight a little bit. And then in 2006, I got an opportunity to play for India for the first time.
And then once when you transitioned from domestic to international, how did that stage of playing international impacted your life and the game?
Well, I was all too young, yeah. I was 20 years old.
I'm taking you back to the...
I played for India at a time when it was kind of impossible to play for India, especially white ball cricket, because the kind of people you're competing with, or the kind... I was an opening batter. Yeah. So the other opening batters in the side were Sachin Tendulkar, Saurav Ganguly, Virender Sehwag, Rahul Dravid, Gautam Gambhir. So. This is just to name a few. Okay, these are the guys opening the batting for India at that point in time. I don't know how. I got to look in at that point in time. I think Paji was injured. Sachin Paji was injured.
Okay.
And he's going through his tennis elbow injuries, I think. And then, so I got to look in at that point in time. And so I didn't play for a long time. Rahul Dravid was captain when I played for India initially. And I played my first game, scored some sort of a record in that first game. And then 2 games later, got dropped from the Indian team. And then I got a little taste of blood and I want more. And
so you were dropped from the Indian team at that point of time.
After three games. So my debut game, and then I was the highest scorer by an Indian on debut in my debut one day game. And then I got 2 more games. I got a game against Pakistan in Abu Dhabi, and I got a game against West Indies in West Indies. And those 2 games didn't go well for me. And then I got dropped immediately because I think Paji was coming back into the side or something was happening. And then I was like, okay, I want to play for India again. So I went back to domestic cricket, and the drop is there is a drop between domestic and international cricket. So I came down to domestic cricket and then I knew I had to score runs. And I had a nice incident there that happened. Venkatesh Prasad was our Ranji Trophy coach at that point in time. I remember the first game I didn't get runs. The second game was against Haryana. I scored a 50 in the first innings. And, you know, Venki called me up to his room. So I went to his room. And Venki was a proper traditional kind of coach, very disciplined, but very passionate about the game and came through. So he called me to his room and he said, Rob, you just played for India and, you know, you've just gotten dropped from the Indian team. So what are your plans? I'm like, yeah, I certainly want to make a comeback. So he was like, okay, so how will you make a comeback? I was like, I have to score runs. So, okay, let's have a look at, you know, where you are in the run scorers chart. So this is the second game of the Ranji Trophy. He downloaded and printed out a copy of the top 100 run scorers in Ranji Trophy in the first 2 games. So he showed me the list and he said, your name is flipped. Your name is flipped. Oh, your name's here. Oh, you're 47th highest run scorer in the Ranji Trophy right now. And he was like, where do you want to be? So he's like, I want to be at the top. I want to be number one top scorer. I want to be top scorer for Ranji Trophy in runs. So like, okay, so how will you do that? So like, I got to put my head down and score runs. He's like, okay, get to it. And that was all I needed, man. I went back in the second innings of the game. I got 100. And then in that tournament, in Ranji Trophy, I top scored Ranji Trophy. I scored, I think, 850 runs. Scored 500s in that Ranji Trophy. And by the time we reached the semi-finals of the Ranji Trophy, I made a comeback into the Indian team.
Wow.
And for me, today when I look back at it, it's about how you draw inspiration from... And it's I could very easily at that point could have taken it as, why the heck is he telling me, showing me how badly I'm doing?
Yeah.
And taking it on my ego.
Yeah.
But I said, hey, I was able to look at the intention of what... his intention of why he was sharing that with me. He wanted good for me, but he had his way of putting that across to me.
Yeah.
And then it was up to me to take it in the right sense and say, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I was able to do that and get the team to the Ranji Trophy semi-finals in that year, which we hadn't achieved in a while.
Wow.
Karnataka. And then make a comeback into the Indian team, which was phenomenal for me. Then we went ahead and I went and got into the World Cup side that went to West Indies. Yeah. We lost the World Cup in the first round. That was a proper debacle with the whole Greg Chappell fiasco that happened in the Indian cricket. And I never thought I'd play for India again, to be honest. But sure enough, 4 months later, I was lifting the World Cup in 2007. So, and then, you know, the wind of the IPL came about and just changed the whole... I think that win, that 2007 win, winning the World Cup, and... the fact that the ICL happened, the Indian Cricket League happened, which is a T20 format league. But funnily enough, BCCI had the IPL as an idea sitting with them since the late 90s, apparently, and early 2000s.
Really?
Yeah, but they just sat on it, is what I've heard. This is conjecture, but it's what I've heard. And then when the ICL kind of happened, it kind of propagated them to say, you know what? We have let's just get this on the ground because we've just won the 2007 World Cup as well, and then in 2008 we went and won the CB series in Australia, which India hadn't won the One Day series since 1985 when they won the World Test series, the World Championship in 1985 where Ravi Shastri was the man of the series. So when that happened, I think we knew that the IPL is going to happen, and then the minute IPL happened, Dhruv, you could tell that something was shifting. There was a huge paradigm shift happening in the world of cricket, and we were all there, par for the course. Yeah. You know, we saw it happening on the ground, and the evolution is great.
Since we were speaking about your lows, and you know, so I know cricket involves a lot of mental health. How did you overcome that?
Well, I think sport in general kind of teaches you, and which is why I think every kid should play some form of sport growing up, because in sport, you meet victory or defeat on a day-to-day basis and a game-to-game basis, right? And to be able to meet that on a regular basis is important because, one, it builds resilience, right? Two, just by playing a sport, you become a more disciplined human being. You become a better citizen of the world because there's respect. Because you, when you experience as a kid, you experience highs and lows consistently and regularly, you become a more humbler human being.
Very true.
You don't take anything for granted. For me, growing up, I obviously went through a lot of ups and downs in my cricketing career. Got dropped a bunch of times, made a bunch of comebacks. In those periods, I think one of the things you want to kind of focus on is to kind of stay in the present and focus at the task on hand, because you can't control what's gone by. You can't control what's going to happen. And you can't guarantee success in life.
True.
I think after playing sport, one of the things I've understood is that in sport and in life, you can't guarantee success.
Very true.
For example, you can study for an examination, study the whole syllabus for an examination. And if you can retain it, you can guarantee success there.
True.
But you can study or you can practice the entire syllabus or curriculum of cricket, but you can get off first ball.
True. You can, if you don't... Like play it well at that point of time, you're done.
Right? Yeah. And so, because there's so many variables in sport, you can't guarantee success, but you can give yourself the best chance to be successful in sport and in life. And I think the way to give yourself the best chance is to focus on the now and to focus on processes and to be more process-driven than goal-driven or than result-driven. Sometimes, unbeknownst to us, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves because we're focusing on achieving a target and we forget that if it takes 100 steps to get there, we need to focus on taking one step at a time and count those steps.
Yeah.
And we'll get there. We'll get to 100 along the way.
True.
It's a matter of fact, right?
True.
But we focus on 100 and like, oh, I've got to get 100. You obviously make missteps along the way because your feet are not, your eyes are not on the ground.
Yeah.
Right? And sometimes it's nice to have light just for that one step ahead of us. And you can, if you actually think about it, I think the hardest times in our lives are the most memorable ones for us.
True.
Because that's when we have exercised resilience the most.
100%.
You know, and I think that's what sport has taught me. Resilience. And I think life in general has taught me, I think has been resilience. And I've been through a bunch of mental health issues. I've been through clinical depression. I've been through being suicidal and playing competitive sport while being suicidal. And I've overcome all of that. I've been on medication for clinical depression for years together. And I've kind of overcome all of those things. And here I am today. And so one of the things I'm truly passionate about is about throwing as much light on mental health.
Yes.
Because for me, I think everyone goes through it and people don't know how to navigate through it. But I also think post the pandemic, people are just using it as a whim, which is unfortunate. I hope people actually take it a little bit more seriously because I think you can't minimize how important it is. And you can't trivialize it. And I think people are trivializing it today. People who've gone through trauma, actually going through proper mental health issues, need support. There are ways to kind of address it. You know, I think the Indian, and for me, that's something I'm truly passionate about and something I actually speak a lot about and something I want to associate myself with as well. Now that I've in the back end of my cricketing career, I think that's where I truly want to be involved in and add value to society if I can in that fashion.
So how did you overcome your clinical depression when you were going through and you were actively playing at that point of time as well?
I was.
So how did you manage both? How did you get through it? Because I know it might be a very low point in your life at that point of time because you're playing also and there's something going on also. How did you push through that?
Well, for me, it was, I had an incredible counselor. I had someone who kind of helped me through that whole period. Very grateful to my mom and an aunt of mine who's passed on, who put me on this counselor. And to this day is my counselor. So anytime I need help, I reach out to her. She's a wonderful lady. And I think the secret of a good counselor is, and if anyone wants to understand what a good counselor is someone who will get you out of your own way and empower you to figure out solutions for yourself.
True.
A good counselor is not someone who will give you solutions.
Yeah.
A good counselor is someone who will literally move you out of your own way and empower you and help you figure out, okay. And then you'll be like, hey, I landed on this myself. And this is so cool. And that's so empowering. And for me, my counselor did that. And I'm entirely grateful to her. And she's one of someone that I hold very dear to my heart today.
And since you talk about it openly, what would you like to tell the people who you know, like, for example, if you see your friend, like you know that they're going through maybe depression or they're getting into it, or what would you suggest them to make sure that, you know, because, you know, at an early stage, even you don't know you're going through it, but people around you who are close to you can figure out.
Can,
sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. Correct. I think that's, I know what you're getting at. And I think sometimes the person actually going through it isn't even aware. I wasn't aware. And I think I kind of felt something was wrong when, you know, I was in South Africa playing the second IPL and I was not doing well. Something happened where we were not used to this in cricket where, you know, in cricket, when you play for a team, you're extremely loyal to that one team. So I was one of the first people in the IPL to get transferred from one team to the other. Okay. And my transfer happened 3 weeks before the second IPL began in South Africa. So for me, it was very, very like strange. And I think I was already struggling through a lot of personal issues at home. And for me, this kind of tipped me over to the other side. And I'm scared of heights. And I find myself in this South African hotel. My room's in the 21st or 22nd floor. And for some reason, the windows open all the way out. And I open the window and I'm sitting with my legs out. Off the window. Yeah, on the windowsill. I'm sitting on the 22nd floor. I'm like, this is interesting. I'm not scared. I'm not feeling anything. And I was actually quite numb. And then I sat there for about 20 minutes, half an hour. And then I came back into the room. And I was like, something's not right. I should call my parents here. I should just call my family here. And as dysfunctional as my family was, I actually called them over because they were my only support system. So I called my mom and dad and my sister over, and they came to South Africa. I kind of got through the IPL, and that's when they realized that something was wrong with me. So I think, and then I went to my counselor. My mom and my aunt took me to the counselor, and then I started working on myself. But it wasn't a short journey. I think one of the things that I'd like to say at this point is that empathy is not something that's easily available in the world today. I think we live in a world where we like to take people down, where we're very varied on what we believe. It's two opposites. We live in a world where it's hard to just agree to disagree with each other.
Yeah.
You know, I wish we come back to a world where we don't have to agree on everything, but we just agree to disagree.
You know,
and I think in doing so, we'll get to a place where there's more empathy in the world, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's a massive lack of empathy in the world today. And if I can play a part in that, I'd love to. And that's something that I want to do in my life post-cricket. Having said that, I think if you can empathize with my brother's going through, I see him going through depression, or I see him not being okay. Hey, are you okay? It's been a few days and I noticed that you seem a little down. Do you want to talk about it? And is there something that's going on? Just to ask that question, you know, would go a long way in someone just figuring out, you know, if something's wrong or not. How do you help? What can we do to help? I think even the taboo of, I think it's not here in Dubai, but in India, it's still a taboo to reach out to. I remember when I went to a counselor, it was like, don't tell anyone you're going to a counselor. It doesn't look good, especially because you play a sport, you know, and I've always tried to kind of break that barrier down, and I've always spoken about my mental health because I just want to break that barrier down. A lot of people today, I think, especially after the pandemic, people kind of feel like they're going through depression.
But that's actually not.
But it's not depression.
Yeah.
You go through difficult times in life, but it's not.
It's depression. Loneliness, probably.
It's loneliness. It could be something else, but it's not depression. Depression is very, very different. Depression is actually a biochemical deficiency in the brain.
Yeah.
It's the, if you look at it from that point of view, it's the most general kind of thing that indicates that is the lack of production of serotonin in your brain, right? In the pineal gland. And there's no serotonin reuptake that happens. So you need to take medication for that. Yeah. And you can't muck around with the medication as well. And I did that. I mucked around with the medication. So I took medications for the first 2 months. I was advised to take medication. Yeah. And we tried to work through counseling. I did a couple of months of counseling, and then I felt better and I stopped going to my counselor, and then it hit me back. And then I went back to her after 3-4 months again, and I continued going to her. And then we just got to a point where when we went through my life, we realized, okay, you know, there's a lot of things that he has to deal with. So there's a lot of trauma through childhood and all of that. And then so she put me onto a psychologist who recommended medications and all that. So I started doing the medications. After taking the medications, I felt as good as gold in a month, Dhruv. And then after that, I was like, I'm fine. I don't need to take this anymore. You know that Indian mentality,
yes,
or just that subconscious mentality?
Done, done.
Like, you know, they have given you antibiotics a course for a week. You take it for 4 days and you feel better. And you're like, I'm done, man. I don't need to finish the course.
Yeah, true.
That mentality kicked in for me, you know? And I think it's a very wrong mentality. I think, and I think I learned that the hard way, because when I stopped taking the medication for a month, I fell back into depression, but this time in a very, very, very bad state. It kind of quadrupled the intensity that I was feeling. It felt so low. I didn't feel like getting up off the bed. It just didn't feel right for a long time. So I went through being like that for a good period of time before I started taking my medication again. And I think I recognized I had clinical depression in 2009. I actually came out of it, I think, in 2015.
Wow, that's
so
a lot of years.
It was a long process.
Yeah.
You know, and you need to be diagnosed right. You need to take the right medication. You need to have multiple opinions. Don't just go to one psychologist. Find a right counselor, which is why I spoke about, you know, what a good counselor does.
Yeah.
I think that's also very important because people don't understand how do you define a good counselor. Yeah. So it's important to understand what a good counselor is. Even if you go to a psychologist for medications, make sure you are taking multiple opinions, because if more than one or two or three people are saying, okay, you need to take this medication, then you know, okay, the consensus is right.
Yeah.
Because you are taking stuff that's going to change the biochemistry of your mind. right, in your brains. So you want to make sure you're taking multiple opinions before just popping up,
yeah.
That can have lasting impacts on you. And you need to take it for a long period of time. And for me, that's, I think, one of the mistakes I made as a kid when I had epilepsy. Because epilepsy, again, was very new in India at that point in time. This is in the late 90s. So I went to one doctor who was treating epilepsy and no second opinion. And I just started taking these steroids. I don't even know if they worked or not, because eventually I went to a natural healer and I took that medication for 4 months and then stopped, and then I weaned off that medication, and I've never had an epileptic attack after that.
So
I don't know
which one worked.
That's why it's so important, I think,
to have second opinions, and multiple opinions.
Because it gives you, again, nothing guarantees success, but gives you the best chance to be successful with what you're trying to do there. Yeah, and for me, the steroids actually impacted my growth. Yeah. For me, my limbs are longer than my torso. So I lost a little bit of height along the way and slowed down my metabolism completely. Because at that crucial age between 10 and 13, when you're kind of growing into becoming a teen, I started taking these steroids. And they were progressively higher in dosage. They like, you know, stopped. My mom said, okay, no, let's stop this. Let's find a natural way. And then we did the natural way and it worked.
Diverting back to cricket, like you said, IPL, like it came out once they had the idea for a very long time. And once the World Cup was won, that's when, you know, they pushed. So you've played for two different teams in IPL.
No, I've played for six different teams.
Sorry, you won at two.
Yeah, I won with two teams.
Yeah. How is that winning from one team to the other? Like, you know, like when you're being pushed, because it's not in your hands who you want to play for.
No, it's not. Absolutely not in the players' hands in the IPL who they want to play for.
How does that impact you guys? Like, you know, because it's like everybody sees the auction, correct?
It's weird,
and then
man.
You have like weird dynamics with everybody in the end of the day. So how does that work for you guys?
It's actually weird, to be honest. I wish there was a more respectful way of conducting, players moving to different teams. I wish there was a draft system instead of an auction system. Yeah. People would probably criticize me for this, but I think the auction system is a very archaic way of doing things. I think in general we need a semblance of more respect for cricketers as well, right? Because it feels like, honestly, it feels like you're cattle, you know. And a lot of it depends on how lucky you are, where you come out in the auction. I think there's a more dignified way of doing it. And I think that the draft would be a more dignified way of doing the auctions. Doing the player distribution of the IPL teams. And I hope they get to that place, because it would be way nicer. And also a lot more easier on the anxieties of players and their family members as well. Because players invest a lot of their lives. Parents invest a lot of their finances as well into pursuing. It takes a village, to become a cricketer in India. It's a team effort. And there's a lot that goes into becoming a cricketer in India and become a successful cricketer in India. And these kind of things can be mitigated, I think. I mean, it's just small things. And I think even if it's a draft system, the viewership will be as much. And people will have an idea, okay, the speculations will be lesser. It's not a shot in the dark as to where a player will go. And I hope it gets to that. I think it'll be great if it gets to that with the IPL.
How was the feeling when you won the World Cup? Let's come to that, because everybody wants to know, because people watching it, like when you win it, people love that. But you've actually worked towards it. You guys have played on the field, that pressure that you guys feel, and then actually lifting it. How does that feel when you're actually lifting it up?
Well, to be honest, it was surreal. Yeah. I was all of 20 or 21 years old when that happened. And maybe a little older, 22. But it was just surreal, to be honest. As in, there are three things I'll take to my grave. The birth of my kids and winning the World Cup. For me, I don't think that feeling will ever go away, because it was so special. It was the first one after 1983. Yeah. So it was like 20, 30 years in the making. Yeah. And incredible cricketers like Rahul Dravid and Saurav Ganguly and the likes of them were pursuing that dream for a long time and weren't able to achieve it. And then here goes a young side who no one kind of had any hopes on, goes on to win the World Cup. Yeah, and one of the stories I remember from that is Ajit Agarkar, who's a part of our side, World Cup winning side. You know, we wore the medals and he wouldn't take the medal off. And I went to him and I said, Ajit, why aren't you removing the medal? He's like, Robin, you don't know what we have just achieved. And honestly, we didn't know, Yadruv. We took a flight. The government sent an Air India flight to charter us back to India. And on the way back, I had some of the most fascinating memories from that time. On the way back, while we were landing into India, is when literally the energy in the aircraft was changing. It felt like, okay, we're going home. We've done something really, really special. And then when we landed, and we landed in Bombay, and then once we landed, finished immigration, we came out, and then like it was just like overflow of love. Like it was just like, it just didn't stop. Wave after wave of love. Wave after wave of love. And it didn't stop, man. You got into a bus and they put a double-decker bus, yeah, and then funny, it's like we experienced all four seasons in that 5 hours from the airport
to
Wankhede. And there was no sea link at that point in time. Yeah. So we went through
The longer route,
right? We went through the inner roads of Dadar and came out of Dadar. We went through the Cadbury's factory. And then we went to, which is that, through Mahalakshmi and all of that. And then we got to Marine Drive and got there. And it was so strange. So we left the airport, it rained. After half an hour, it was hot. You know that humid heat. You feel in Bombay? It was that scorching sunlight. And we finished that, it got a little cooler. By the time, and literally people were just, the traffic just went one way to start off. Everything went one way. Bombay stood still.
Yeah.
Everything was just moving one way. So people tried, and there was a bus in front of us that had DJ Akhil playing music. And then every car started going this. And people started walking with the bus, yeah. People walked for like 6 hours with the bus from the airport to Wankhede. And like they were throwing water bottles at us for us to drink water. They were throwing food at us, throwing us fruits. We passed through the Cadbury's factory, which was at Haji Ali at that point in time. And they were throwing chocolates at us from the Cadbury's factory. It was incredible. Just that experience is something I will cherish for the rest of my life. Yeah. And I consider myself very blessed and lucky to have experienced that as an athlete, to feel the love of a country overflow into your life in that sense is something that is truly, truly incredible.
So you've also played under Dhoni with Virat Kohli. So how is it to play under Dhoni? I know he's a very good friend of yours as well. We know something that we'll talk about. But how is it to play under him? Like, what is that mentorship that he brings? Or, you know, like, how is he as a person on the ground, off the ground, that people adore him?
One of the things I think about Mahi is, in some way, he lives so much in the present. People think I'm a kiss-ass for saying this. But he lives so much in the present that I believe he channelizes the divine. Okay. Which is why his instincts and gut is so good. You know, and he's so clear about how he wants to go about his cricket, his life in general. He's very clear about that. Yeah. I've met very few people with that much clarity. In the cricketing fraternity, I could say, or out of the top of my head, I would say Virender Sehwag and MS Dhoni. Like right at the top of my head. Who are the guys who live in the moment? These two guys. And they do it so well. They do it with panache, man. Virubhai is in the moment. He wants to have fun in his life. And he's very clear about that and comes across like that. MS is very much like that. MS is someone who lives in the moment, doesn't go to the future, doesn't go to the past, doesn't stay in the past, doesn't take anything for granted.
Yeah.
He does not take a single thing for granted. And conversations with him are fascinating. It's like when you sit and have a conversation with him, it's like sitting with someone who is very wise. He does not do anything special.
Yeah.
He does not do anything special. I think the most special thing that he does is that he stays in the present. It seems like such a simple thing to do.
Yeah.
It isn't.
Yeah.
He exercises that and he lives in a way, he lives his life in a way where he exercises that on a day-to-day basis. So he'll play a strategy game on his PS just to exercise being in the present. He'll play backgammon with a mate just to stay in the present. Yeah. And he has concepts in life as well. And he's very clear about things. And he's like, I'll do it my way. And doing it my way, I may succeed 7 out of 10 times. But if I can succeed 7 out of 10 times doing it my way, I'd rather, that means majority of the time I'm winning, yeah? So, and for me, that's like, those are life lessons. So if you're doing it your way and you're not winning majority of the time, then it makes sense to try another way. But if majority of the time you're winning, you know, and some, there are often times I've asked him, why do you take it to the last two overs or last over to try and finish a game? He's like, I have my logic behind it. My logic is that in that period or in that phase of the game, the bowler is under more pressure than I am in.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know that I may lose matches. I may lose matches taking it to the death. But the majority of times I've taken it there to the last over, I've won it. I've won it 8 out of 10 times. So if I've won it 8 out of 10 times, I'm going to continue doing that. Because I'm not looking for 100% success. I'm looking for majority success. And funnily enough, I've thought about it a little bit more. What is the majority? Majority is 51%.
Yeah.
Actually, 50.1%
true
is majority.
True.
So with any aspect of life, with anything in life, if you're doing it a majority of the time, you're actually doing it, you're actually
succeeding.
Succeeding.
Yeah.
It could be a habit. It could be a trait that you want to develop. It could be something new that you're trying to develop in your life, a new skill. If you're doing it majority of the time, you'll get to mastering it. And I think that's one of the things I've learned from MS, and he does not do anything special. He's a very, 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 very simple human being. Yeah. And he's incredibly funny. He's got this very dry sense of humor. Yeah. Oh my God. He is he's got a very annoying, dry sense of humor. What a top guy. Him, Irfan, Suresh, Raidu, Piyush Chawla, RP Singh, some of my closest friends in the game.
And we've also heard something that you've made Mahi Meat. I want you to say that name, but who you made Mahi Meat?
Oh gosh, man. This is thanks to Sakshi. This is, I think, Sakshi's fault. And this, the world wasn't supposed to know, but Sakshi went and put up on social media that Mahi and me met because of Robin. So
what did you do?
I think, with all due respect, I think it's their story to tell.
Yes, of
and
course.
I wouldn't like to be the one to tell the story. Yeah. But yes, as in, technically they met through me. But they were meant to be. Yeah. Both of them are incredibly loving people, and I think our closest family friends today. We love their kid Ziva. Yeah. She is an angel of a girl. And got the purest soul, that girl. We only have wonderful things to say about them. They're very, very nice people, good people.
So in the movie, MS Dhoni, since we know now that you are the person who made these two people meet, these pure souls, the movie had they met at the hotel.
Mm.
Were you in that hotel? I'm assuming,
of course,
yes.
We were at the hotel because we were playing matches there. And all I'm going to say is Sakshi was interning at that hotel from her college in Aurangabad, and from Aurangabad she'd come in to intern for a bit, and that's when we met. We all became friends, and that's where they actually met.
Yeah,
that's all I'll say to that. The rest is up to
those.
I'm not gonna say anymore.
So now coming to Virat Kohli, he's also one of the most fabulous players in Indian cricket. He's changed a lot of things because a lot of youth probably connects to him, today's youth. How do you think that has shifted Indian cricket, like in the sense of being in the light also?
To be very honest, I've seen Chiku since he started playing.
His pet name is Chiku?
Yeah. So I've seen...
I know something. No, I didn't know about it. I had no clue.
Really? Okay. So I know Virat since he started playing for RCB. We played together.
Yeah.
So that's when I know him from. So in 2009. And I've seen him evolve from a brash, young Delhi kid into a very evolved human being today. And it's been a process of ups and downs, highs and lows. But he's gotten there. And I think he's done it, again, with a lot of panache. I think Anushka has had a massive role to play in that. And he has always kind of pointed towards that as well.
Yeah.
And he's someone whose journey has been fascinating. And I truly believe that this year is going to be one of his best years as far as cricket is concerned, as far as batting is concerned. I think it's just a gut feeling. I just feel like he's going to score tremendous amount of runs and he's going to do something incredibly special this year as far as scoring runs is concerned. Yeah. And coming back to him as a person, I think very evolved. And I've seen that evolution happening, especially post his captaincy. I think the evolution kind of even has sped up a lot more. I truly admire who he's become today. Conversations with him are always interesting. He's a very open and guy who leaves his heart on his sleeve. You see it on the field, but off the field is also very much like that. Loves his family a lot, and rightfully so, for the man of his stature is a very private person. Someone that I'm very fond of, and I've had my emotions even go up and down with him. But today, someone that I admire and draw a lot of inspiration from.
So before we end, there's a fun segment because we've spoken about your past, your current. Let's just get a little fun game. It's called the Brew and Buzz with Kalf Buzz. I have a set of questions. It's like a rapid fire. Mm. Just say what you like. All right. Favorite cricket ground you played at?
Oh, man. I will never be able to do justice to this because I've played for 6 IPL teams. Yeah. I've played in so many grounds across India that have been my home grounds. Yeah. I've enjoyed all of them.
But one. You can have one.
Oh, man. I would have to say Eden Gardens, guy.
Okay.
Eden Gardens in Kolkata. Mm-hmm. Easily my favorite ground.
Toughest bowler you've faced in your career?
Toughest bowler I have faced in my career has to be Mone Mokal. Okay. He's someone who is very tall. He's a sweet, gentle giant. But at his best... someone who made me feel like, oh, okay, this is going to be a little hard to deal with.
One batsman you admire the most?
Bro, these questions I can't do justice to, but from the 80s, Vivian Richards, from the 90s, Sachin Tendulkar, from the 2000s, Rahul Dravid. these are just a few.
Okay. Most memorable innings of your career?
I would have to say something that's truly memorable was my T20I debut. Against Pakistan in the World Cup. It's the first game where I got a 50 and we got the bowl out and won the game, which is a tied game. So for me, that game is very, very special.
Your go-to pre-match ritual?
I'm a very, very ritualistic kind of person during games. So I have a routine that I set for myself, but those routines are not set in stone. So I get to a place and then those routines kind of form themselves, you know, and then I kind of follow those routines through the course of my stay in that one place. If I go to another place, then based on the energy there, I set routines. But one of the things I always do is I go to a dressing room, I sit down, place my seat against a wall, my kit bags on my right, my pads are on the left side of me, my backpack's on the left side of me, my shoes are on the left side of me. My bats, I carry 5 bats, my 5 bats are against the wall. So I'm very, very organized. And that's my ritual.
Best cricketing advice you've ever received?
Best cricketing advice I've ever received. Stay in the moment. Enjoy the game. Play it for the love of it.
If not a cricketer, what profession you would have chosen?
I probably would have been a tennis player, I think.
Okay, so into sports.
Into sport for sure. In some sport.
Okay. Funniest teammate you have played with?
Oh, funniest teammate I've played with. I'd have to say on top of the list would be Irfan Pathan and Harbhajan Singh.
Yeah.
Oh, both pranksters. Ifu and I are like husband and wife. Literally, Yusuf actually says...
इनके बीच में आप बोल नहीं सकते हो लाइक है ना एक हस्बैंड वाइफ किस तरह से फाइट करते हैं ना इस तरह से फाइट करते हैं हस्बैंड वाइफ का कैसा रहता है फाइट करते 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 एंड देन एक दो घंटे के बाद दोनों बैठे होते आराम से किसी का नहीं चलता राइट तो इनका दोनों का वैसा ही है ये अभी हम लोग कौन सा टूर्नामेंट लेजेंड वाला टूर्नामेंट खेल रहे थे और मैं भी बैठा हुआ था इरफान भी बैठा हुआ था ये भी बैठा आया ये रूम में आया और थोड़ी देर हुई सडनली ये लोग फाइट करना स्टार्ट कर दिया और मैं बैठ कैसे देख भैया आप लोगों के बीच में मैं नहीं बोल रहा तुमको जितना फाइट करना है करो और शाम को दोनों एक दूसरे को फोन करते हैं, अरे किधर है, कहाँ खाना खाना खाया, किधर जाना है.
Actually says that, and every time we're together, we'll be having like the best time. But inside 2 minutes, we'll be at each other's throats, and we share an absolute love-hate relationship that I'm sure goes into I don't know eons. But he's someone that I absolutely adore. He's a brother.
Favorite cricket memory from a childhood?
From my childhood, favorite cricket memory. I would have to say it's a little tenacious, but I'll share it with you. So I grew up in a volatile home, and I remember getting ready for a school final, and I just went into my room to change and come out. I changed and I came out and I heard some loud thuds inside the outside. So I came out and I saw milk all over the floor, furniture broken, chandelier broken. And I realized that, you know, something's happened and there's a fight that's happened at home. And then I leave home to go and play the finals of the school tournament. I score 100. And I come back home. We win that first final. It's a 3-match final. So we win the first final, come back home. And in the evening, we've had a meal like nothing even happened in the morning. And for me, that's a memory that comes back to me because it changed the whole purpose of why I played cricket.
Yeah.
As a kid. As a kid, I played it for the love of the game. But that day, I remember sitting down. I still remember what I ate for food that day. I had chapati, some sabji, some chicken, and there was some raita. And that's what I had for dinner. I was sitting down and I said, hey, I just have to do this. My family will always be happy. And
wow.
My purpose for playing cricket changed that day in a very deep manner. And then I had to, that only shifted, I must have been 12 at that point in time, but that shifted only at about 18 or 19 for me again.
Wow. One word to describe your playing style?
I'd say flamboyant.
Okay. Favorite cricket format? Test, ODI,
test,
or T20?
Man. Test. That is the best format. I know you won't relate, but test. I would say, man, test is the best format. Test is best.
Yeah. Most challenging match you've played in?
Plenty. So many matches that I've played and have been really, really
but
hard.
One that is on top of your mind?
I would have to say again, a fun game was clearly the World Cup, T20 World Cup final. That was a really tough game. And to become champion, world champions after playing a game like that was phenomenal. Yeah, so for me, that game for sure.
And the last one, best cricketing moment of your career so far?
I'd have to say winning the World Cup in 2007. Yeah. Yeah.
So before we close, cricket is a global game. There are a lot of young talent out there who want to be cricketers, who want to make a profession in cricket, whether playing for their country or with, you know, just within domestic, a franchise. What would you say to them?
To them, I would actually say, make sure cricket's your passion first. Make sure you're playing it for the love of the game. Because if your purpose of playing the game is not because you're passionate about it, then you lose yourself along the way. The second thing is, if you're absolutely clear and crystal clear about passion, set goals for yourself and forget about them. Make sure you set goals. Dream massively. Like, have the biggest dreams in the world as far as your cricket's concerned. And forget about them. Forget about them, because those are results. Think about them for a moment and then forget about them and figure out what your process is to get there. Work backwards from there. And that's something I actually want to do. I want to be able to help cricketers. I think not just cricketers, I think high-performance coaching is something that I'm actually looking at.
You're planning to start that here?
Yeah, I'm planning to start that here. And we're planning to do a bunch of things here. But if I had to just pass a message on the young cricketers, these two would be it. To be able to play it for the passion, for the love of the game. And set goals, forget about it, and figure out what your process is to get to that goal.
So rapid fire was fun. Now moving back to the start that we did, and you were in Dubai, you moved, and we spoke about, you know, the challenges you faced, you know, while moving and how the transition was. But what actually brings you to Dubai, and what does future hold here for you?
Well, the kids brought me to Dubai.
Yeah.
We came here to Dubai for the kids. And I'm still finding my feet here. To be very honest, the last year has been a transitional phase for me. Also trying to qualify as an NRI, so navigating through that whole
process
as well. How does it implicate tax-wise? What do you need to do to qualify? And how can I still work in India, but also build something here? And here I've actually landed on a few things. You know, high performance coaching as far as cricket is concerned is something that I certainly want to do. I think that's somewhere that I can truly add value. I'm actually navigating through those processes now. I'm also looking to do some high performance coaching as far as counseling people are concerned in the business industry, in the sporting industry, or in the corporate industry. Helping them achieve their goals is something that I want to do, and I'm actually navigating through that whole process now. We're also looking at moving here, me moving from India here as someone who's famous, has been a process. And I know that a lot of people are looking to set up second bases here. We're navigating through. Is there something that we can do to help them navigate through the process in a way that's a lot more easier? Because I've gone through getting a visa, to getting a residence visa, to getting a home, getting schools for kids. You want to buy a house, rent a house, investments here, bank accounts. The whole works, right? I've been through everything. Yeah. And so to be able to help in as far as that is concerned, I think as a person, I want to live a life that's aligned to my passion and my purpose. And I think I know what my purpose is in life, and I recognize it as me wanting to add value to people around me. And for me, I think anything I want to do in life has to kind of be in that realm. So for me, all these are the things that I've actually found in that realm, and it's something I'm truly excited about. So I think in the next few months, I'll probably land on my feet and know, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And maybe even a podcast. Huh?
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's something that I will be doing. That's something I want to do, because I truly believe, like, I'd love to know how you started, because I think everyone is a hero of their own story, right? And I think there's a lot to learn from everyone. There's a lot of inspiration to be drawn from every single human being, and I think there's not enough light shed on that. And that's something that I would love to do. And, that's something that I'm going to start doing very, very soon.
Yeah. And we're I'm actually very looking forward. I'm sure people are looking forward for it. And talking about a little bit of a glamour part, do you get clicked into Dubai also now?
Yeah, quite a lot.
Yes, of course, because it's you've played for the Indian cricket team, you've been in IPL, so definitely. But Dubai market.
Quite a bit, actually. Yeah. I'm half Mallu and half Koorgi. So you know now there's a Mallu connection. So anytime I'm going to Paragon or anytime I go to Bar Dubai, if I just walk around there, then you kind of navigate through that.
And out of so many months, which is your favorite restaurant in Dubai? Because we talk a lot about restaurants and dining. So I don't know I should put you in that spot, but
go for it. I don't mind. Actually,
so what's your favorite restaurant in Dubai?
I love Paragon for the Mallu food. For my shawarmas, I like Lafa, and I like my Hemak.
Oh yes,
you try my Hemak?
I know. Yes,
you get the shawarmas and. There's one more I'm going to mention. And the avocado shake is incredible. Yeah. And there's another place called Ijaza. Have you heard of Ijaza? It's a whole... It is...
My childhood, guys.
Yeah. I love Ijaza.
Yes.
It is incredible. Yes. And we have one that's very close to where I live.
Shake from Ijaza.
Yeah. So there's one very close to where I live right now. We live at the villa. So there's one very close to that. And I just go there all the time. Yeah. It's a lot of fun, yeah.
Great. Thank you so much.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And that concludes another retriving episode of Spill the Tea. A heartfelt thank you to our special guest, Robin Uthappa, for sharing his incredible journey, insights, and wisdoms from the world of cricket. We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did. Until next time.